building trust is key to business success. That's why we're talking about the sneaky shit. Welcome to Across the Desk, and it's also sneaky shit. We should do a we haven't done a theme song yet.
We need a theme song, but you can sing because I sing poorly.
Well, I like to think I sing well, but that could be this, you know, delusion that I have. I don't know.
I used to get told to shut up when I sang at home,
Never had that. That's harsh, man.
That is harsh.
That's harsh. Okay. So welcome to Sneaky Shit. This is the podcast where we talk about the six principles of influence as they relate to sales and business. And welcoming my co-sneaky shitter.
That's the worst time I've ever had.
That didn't work.
Worst time.
My co-host sneaky person. Sure, we'll go with that.
Okay.
Marguerite Zimmerman, who is the founder and owner of E equals MZ Squared, which is a business here in Burlington, Ontario. Hello.
Hello. How are you this evening?
I'm well, thank you.
Good.
I am well. Somebody taught me, just as an FYI, somebody said, don't ever say you're good. They said, say you're well.
Hmm.
And there was a reason. I was thinking about it on the way here, and I have no idea why, but there's a reason behind it. But it helps to elevate your wellness and well-being.
Your psyche. So we could say, I'm awesome.
I could, but I think people would start running away screaming.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to stick with well for right now.
All right.
But Marguerite is, she's got an amazing product called Momentium. And her company, E equals MZ Squared, has gamified the sales training process. And I'm sure we've mentioned this before, but we're going to mention it again. And so we've got a few things on the agenda. But we are at, I believe we're at number 5 on the Sneaky Shit podcast. And so we have talked about congruency.
Mm-hmm.
And we have talked about win-win. We have talked about the six principles, an overview. That's 3 of them. What are the other 2 that we've done? Do you remember? I'm having a moment.
Yeah, we're having moments.
I think we're having a stroke. So we won't worry about that. But it's awesome and you should go listen. And so this evening, we're moving forward with 2 more. So we're going to have back-to-back tonight. And we are starting with, and I love this. I've never heard of it before. And it's, so the overall thing was not at someone else's expense.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you and I were chatting, you mentioned the versus a.
Yes.
And I know that might not make sense right now, but trust me, by the time we're done, you'll totally get it. And so tell me a little bit, please, Marguerite, about not at someone else's expense. What the overall, because we've gone into the positive and negative, and we have a few key points that we're going to be talking about. But from a business and sales perspective, tell me about not at someone else's expense.
Mm, very good. Well, first of all, I believe in the long term. And so I think the very first in most important principle when we're doing business, whether we're selling or not, is that we really have to have a long-term mindset in terms of our relationships and our approach to how we deal with people. And we've all been there where maybe something's gone wrong with a customer or a prospect and we did a lot of work and then we didn't get the business. And sometimes people burn bridges because they get emotional. And I really, truly believe we should avoid burning those bridges at all costs.
It's a small world after all.
It is a small world. You know, I have a quick story I'll share. Years and years ago, I did a lot of work with a gentleman who was a senior VP in a radio station. Mm-hmm. He was very interested in a sales training solution we were putting forward. And we were supposed to be moving forward. And then all of a sudden, he wasn't answering my calls, and I couldn't get anywhere with him. And then I found out that when I finally reached him, that he had bought a Bay Street Blue Suit, you know, group to do the training. And
so he shafted you.
Yeah, and I felt really kind of put out because we were like, we pretty much had an agreement. It just seemed kind of out of left field, but I handled it really responsibly and professionally on the phone with them. And I said, so here's the thing. They may do things that we don't do. So, you know, based on your experience with it and so on, keep us in mind. And I kept it very positive and, you know, I'll circle back with you in a little while, see how it worked out for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, about maybe 6 months, maybe longer later, I had an open showcase going on where we were doing a negotiation sales training event, and I invited him to attend. And it was you had to pay to come, but it was a small, it wasn't over the top, it was an opportunity for you to come and see what you thought of it and if you felt it would be suitable for anybody else in your team.
Mm-hmm.
And he phoned me and he said, Marguerite, you know, would this be good for me or do you think it'd be good for my team? And I said, well, quite candidly, for, you know, given your experience and your background, I'm not going to tell you this would all be new stuff because obviously you're going to know a lot of it. But I do believe you'll find the program really interesting and you'll find some things that are new in it.
Right.
So anyway, he came to the 3-day event. And at the end of the first day, he actually said, I made a colossal mistake.
Wow.
Right? And he said, I should have bought you, and my team hated the company I bought. I went for the blue suit. You know, they had all this experience and so on. And he goes, they hated them.
Yeah.
Right? And ironically, we actually spent a lot of time looking at ways to work together. He had such a respect for what we brought to the table. And mm-hmm. in the end, we didn't end up working together, but we ended up doing business together, and we had a great relationship.
Very cool.
So I could have burned that bridge so easily mm-hmm. that day, and I didn't burn it. And at the end of the day, you know, it always comes back. You just never know how things are going to work. It's just keeping yeah. yourself in that professional mode, as much as sometimes you might be disappointed.
Very, very true. And I think that can be, a wise mentor said to me, you have to treat business like a surgeon. So, you know, if a family member's laying on the table and you're the only surgeon available, you put that emotion away and you do the job. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that you shouldn't bring empathy and sympathy and everything else to the table, but when a business decision is being made, mm-hmm. you do have to remove that emotional component.
Yes.
You know, I've followed up with a client recently and just to see if we were moving forward or not. And I'm neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific. If I'm of service, if I'm the right fit, fabulous. And it took me about a year to get there. I don't think I've ever been really about it, but I guess like a duck, you know, you sort of calm on the surface but paddle underneath.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I don't think it's never of anybody's benefit to be nasty.
No, at the end of the day, you know, and it's not like I haven't made mistakes along the way and probably have burned some bridges, but at the end of the day, the goal is always to have a long-term view.
Absolutely.
And if we have a long-term view, a lot of the things we're talking about naturally solve themselves because you're always looking to make sure that you're building that long-term equity in your relationships and in your network where people feel good about knowing you and feel good about referring you or coming back and doing business with you when yeah. they change companies. And ultimately, that's the goal, is to do everything you can, and you're never going to make everybody happy. But do everything you can to maintain that long-term relationship yeah. whenever you can.
And mucking people over in the short term, and I'm using the word mucking, but we all know what it rhymes with.
Mm-hmm.
You might feel that you're justified somehow. You might feel that it's the right thing to do to get ahead at that point. You might somehow justify it. Mm-hmm. It will bite you in the bum at some point because I think it's sort of like lying. I think once you've gotten away with it once,
mm-hmm.
it can become a habit. And then you don't even realize that you're doing it. And I read an interesting article, I think in Success Magazine, and this gentleman didn't even realize how badly he was treating his team. He didn't even realize the tone and the vocabulary that he was using when he spoke to his team and what a negative situation he was creating until it was reflected back to him. And I think because nobody had ever challenged him, nobody had ever said, hey, like, you know, back the truck up. Who do you think you're talking to? He just got into that rhythm and habit of doing that. And I don't know that he was intentionally doing it at his team's expense. But when it was finally brought to his attention, he made every effort to correct it. He had just fallen into that. So it's a slippery slope.
When you start
manipulating and being a jerky pants.
Well, it's just, you know, like anything that we get used to doing, like driving. You know, when we start off, we have good behaviors and good habits. And then, you know, I've been known to, be eating, drinking on the phone and shifting gears with my, with one hand and, you know.
So
and,
you're leaving
and turning,
after
and
me,
turn, yeah, and turning the wheel with my knees.
Marguerite!
I have learned how not to do all of those things.
Well, now it's like a $350 fine, Missy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got it. So. But the point is, it's so easy to get onto that slippery yeah. slope. Before you know it, you know, you're trying to, you know, do everything in your car, which is ridiculous. Like, there's just, but it's everything in our lives, right? It's
yeah.
so easy to lose track of it.
So once you move into the situation where you've gotten away with it being at somebody else's expense,
mm-hmm.
then I think you enter into a really challenging time because it takes, they say it takes 21 days. So here's a question for you because you're a smarty pants. They say it takes 21 days to create a new habit consciously. Mm-hmm. But how long does it take to create a habit unconsciously?
Good question. And I have to honestly say I don't have a scientific answer for that. But what I can say to you is I truly believe we create new habits consciously and then they become unconscious. So I'm not sure that I'd like to say that it happens unconsciously. Probably bad habits maybe, but a really good habit.
No, so that's what I mean. Yeah. But a bad habit is really easy to develop.
Sure it is.
Right? And so I'm just wondering.
It's anything that you repeat. So the minute you repeat it every day, the minute you are going to build that habit.
So if you use a sharp tongue with your team and you don't get corrected, if you shave some money off a quote, I don't do these things. These are just, I have to really stretch because I like to think that I'm pretty honest. I see what you're saying.
I think the bad habits are often unconscious because we aren't paying attention and we just get into a pattern of doing things. It's like, you know, if I sit around watching TV at night, it's really easy for me to want to snack and not even be a pain, even not even be hungry, but I'm snacking.
Oh, I do. Well, yeah, right? I'm getting better at that.
Right, so am I. But that takes a conscious focus on not doing it. So I would love to think that some of us build good habits unconsciously, but I don't think we do.
And I have to wonder if social influence is part of that too, if from a not at someone else's expense situation. I was in a job situation where the executive director was a complete jerk, and I could have got sucked into their mentality of hooping people over and doing whatever. And one of the main reasons the position ended was because I said no, and I refused to get drawn into it, doing anything at somebody else's expense, not to that extreme anyway. But I would imagine if you were in a less secure position, because I knew I could leave and I had, you know, my husband's support and finance, but if you're in a less secure position, it's a first job or your financial situation is a bit tricky or whatever, then it would be, I hate to say it, but it might be easier to develop the someone else's expense habit because your, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if that starts to get shaky on the bottom, and you do what you have to do to reestablish homeostasis.
And the reality of what we're going to talk about today is that there's some scientific reasons that once you make that first slippery slopes decision, then you're likely to keep on that slippery slope. You got it.
All right. So we're going to jump into, from a business perspective, it could be anybody, but we're going to keep it to a business perspective, the positives and the negatives of the not at someone else's expense principle. And so let's go over that because we'll start with the positive.
Yes. I like starting with the positive.
I like starting with positive too.
So I like starting with
hit
positive.
Hit me, sister.
Okay. So the real positive, you know, in not being at someone else's expense is we've talked about influencing principles and different principles of communication. And we've spoken about that they can all be good, used for the good. But the interesting thing is those same principles apply for manipulation and for conning somebody. So the whole question is, how do you know when you're using
maybe
something?
I have a bridge.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, I have a bridge. I'm just going to miss that. So the whole question is, well, when am I using something with integrity? And how do I know if it's being used with integrity? I'm going to segue to a little movie we watched a little while ago that you'll get a big kick about if you get a chance to watch it. And it's not like a, you know, it's a B movie, but it's called something like Waffle King. And it opens with this guy, and you can hear him going, if it's not illegal, it's ethical. And he is working so hard to convince himself because he's basically selling some financial products that
are a bit shaky.
And he's knowing it doesn't feel right, but he's selling them and he's like top seller with them. But he's saying over and over again to himself, if it's not illegal, it's not ethical. Well, it's not true.
If it's not illegal,
it's ethical. So, you know, the shaky piece here is,
He's being inconsistent with his values.
Right.
And that's going to make you sick.
Yes.
Which I think people, you know, if your stress is off the charts and you are consistently behaving in a way that's inconsistent with your core values,
It's going to make you sick.
It's going to make you sick.
And just because something is not illegal does not mean it is ethical, because there's lots of things that have been sold to people that, yes, it's illegal to sell it, but it's not necessarily ethical to sell it to those individuals in that way, right? So there's lots of
examples.
It's legal
to sell it.
But it's not
but it's not ethical to sell it.
Exactly.
Fair. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
All right.
Yep, yep.
So the answer is the positive is not to say, well, it's legal. No, that isn't the positive. The positive is to say it's ethical. So then how do we know whether something's ethical or not? Mm-hmm. And the challenge with ethics is we all have different ethics, right?
Yep.
So the first way that we can measure whether we're selling something with integrity or we're doing business with integrity, whatever the situation is to be able to measure the value that we're bringing.
Mm-hmm.
And the value is from the perspective of the individual that you're bringing it to, right? Not from
yes.
your perspective, right? From the perspective
that's a
of
community. That. Okay. Well,
right? It's
yes.
not. It's not what you think is ethical or what you think creates value. It's what brings it to the individual you're bringing it
Which
to.
Which is where you have to communicate and actually find out versus trying to slap your... So that just segues us into the V versus ah. Okay.
It does.
It does.
So the question is always, how am I creating value by either solving the problem, not a problem, not, oh, I'm going to give you this Band-Aid and I'm going to tell you this Band-Aid is going to make you thin and fit and you're going to be like perfect, right? Not a solution.
Are there Band-Aids that do that?
The solution.
I might buy that.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do. It's a big industry with a lot of hype and not a lot of reality,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, I know.
And there's a good example of, you know, ethically, like over-promising, right? So, and it's not going to solve the problem for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really solving the problem,
mm-hmm.
right? Or it's solving the opportunity. So it's mm-hmm. truly creating an opportunity for somebody, but the opportunity that they are looking for to address an issue that they have or an opportunity.
Versus you trying to force your services or product to fit.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay.
Right.
And then...
You know, like the old days, there was a vacuum that they used to sell door-to-door. I'm sure it was a phenomenal vacuum called the Kirby. But the thing weighed a ton. And so then you get people selling it to old people who couldn't lift it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But they'd go and they'd sell it. So come on, give me a break. Is that
ethical just because it's not illegal?
That's right.
Yeah.
So you're not influencing with integrity when you do that. You're right. It's not illegal, but it certainly isn't ethical.
Bad right? vacuum people. See?
Bad.
They
bad
give people name. A bad name.
Yep, bad name. So that would be one way of the positive. And the other one is really integrity is, you know, really measured. The only way you can truly measure it is if this made the news,
mm-hmm.
right?
I love that.
Yeah.
Love that. If your mama found out,
yeah, would you feel good about it?
Would you get soap on your tongue for being nasty?
Right.
And yes, my mom tried to do that.
Or would you? Yeah, most mothers have.
Yeah.
So would you feel good about it?
I challenge that only because you made a really valid point when we opened up, which is what would make one person feel good or bad would not make somebody else feel good or bad.
That's
likewise,
true.
I mean, if they're like that, then their mom is probably not a nice person either. But... if you are having that conversation as the Waffle King and you're having to convince yourself that, mm-hmm. you know, if it's not illegal, it's ethical. If your mama found out that you
mm-hmm.
sold a heavy vacuum to an old person, you know, would you feel like you're 10 years old again and you got caught stealing the last cookie?
The reality is you probably wouldn't feel good about it because
you shouldn't.
In your gut, unless you're truly a narcissistic sociopath, psychopath, we won't mention who in the news today is one of all of those.
But, okay, I'm sorry, that was a little hiccup there.
Right? But if you are all of those things, absolutely, you're right. But anyone who is not,
so a neurotypical,
at the end of the day,
normal, yeah, okay.
yeah, would normal. Definitely know that that was not with integrity, right?
So from a negative perspective in business, when it's not at someone else's expense,
mm-hmm.
you know, what are some things that you see happening? And I see here, I think we sort of covered in the positive. So from a negative perspective, it will be when you are communicating in such a way that people are accepting that there is a solution versus the solution.
Yeah, and there's some core things that you can do to manipulate somebody. So some of the negatives would be when you're manipulating an outcome that, as you just said, isn't really solving the problem or the opportunity, but you're manipulating to that outcome because it's good for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's, you know, you're using certain principles to get people to, whether you're conscious of them or not conscious of them, but you're using these principles to get them to commit. So you get somebody to commit to something smaller.
The consistency principle that we've discussed earlier, yeah.
Yep. And then as soon as they've committed to that, then you come back for the bigger commitment. And then once...
It compels them to...
Yeah.
Yeah. So on the way here, true story, I'm listening to the radio and they're talking about The Exorcist. So when we were discussing the layout for this beforehand and you said compels you, all I can picture is that priest going, the power of God compels you!
And he's that's so funny.
Pushing the demon out or whatever. Sorry. Anyway.
That's a really weird segue.
I know. But compels is a really, you know, it's not a, I would say it's a, I don't know, almost art, not archaic. That's not the right word. Anyway, moving on. Exorcist aside and spitting pea soup, the larger consensus is something that's, we're recording. Is something that you have to be really careful of. Sorry, we just had a little whoopsie doodle.
So, the larger consensus? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the bigger consensus is that it's kind of like the slippery slope for yourself when you convince something's okay and you keep doing it.
Yeah.
But it's the flip side. If somebody else gets you to commit to some small thing, and then the next thing is a bigger commitment, and you know in your gut that you shouldn't be doing it,
yeah,
but now you're kind of stuck with it. Like, so a good example. Somebody I know invited me once, said to me, what are you doing on a Saturday night? Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever used this one as an example, so it's a good one to share. And, you know, probably against my better judgment, I looked at my calendar and said, I'm open, why? And they said, oh, really want you to come to this meeting that we're doing, you know, I'm going to, and, you know, and so on and so on. And I'm like, okay. And now I've made the first commitment that I was available, mm-hmm. right? And the next commitment they wanted me to go to, what it really turned out to be, is it was a religious... outing for a particular, you know, religion. And the thing is I have no problem with what you believe, but I have my own beliefs and I'm not a joiner, but now I felt compelled to have to do it because I made the first commitment. So there I was now going to this meeting and having to get this person to still understand that that's not ever going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? Because
that puts you in an aqua taco.
Right. Because unfortunately, there's some things that don't align with my values and my beliefs, right?
And but good for you for standing strong on that.
Yeah. But I did go to the meeting, but I still, you know, and because I put myself in that position, I made the first, you know, concession and then I was stuck with the bigger one.
Yeah.
But then I was still very clear that it could never happen, right?
Yeah. And it's like a bad first date.
Well, I would be untrue to my own values, right? There's certain things that there would be no question that I wouldn't, so I couldn't do that. I would be completely untrue to my own values.
Yeah.
But that's how powerful that is, because even I knew this is ridiculous because I'm never going to join. And, you know, like it's not going to happen. So how am I going to get that across?
Gotcha. Right? So then we go on to, and we got about 5 minutes, so we're going to have to
move
speedy
forward.
Speedy Gonzalez here.
Okay, good.
So how not to. So how not to end up in a situation where, you know, something's unfolding at your expense. So the barometer that you mentioned again was, you know, if it made the news, would your mama be upset with you? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody's trying to convince you to join a cult or whatever, then obviously if your gut and the belly button thing, oh, that's down here.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know this, and I know the golden rule. Well, I thought I knew the golden rule, but you talk about the platinum rule versus the golden rule.
Yeah, very interesting. So, yeah, the first time I heard the platinum rule, I thought, well, that makes a lot more sense. So we all know the golden rule, that we should treat others as we want to be treated. But the problem with some of what we're talking about with influencing with integrity is that isn't true, right? So the other day I was dealing with a company and there was a gentleman in the room and he was adamant, you know, that he doesn't want somebody to be friendly when you answer, that's wasting time. He doesn't want you to go, you know, he's phoning for service, he doesn't need you to say, oh, hello, this is Elizabeth, you know, you've reached out.
He just wants to be cut and dry.
He wants cut and dry, just get me the bloody service and get me off the phone.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm going, okay,
he needs a hug.
And I'm going, well, that's really really nice, but that's you, right? Yeah. And you're in a customer service role, so you don't get to be you don't get to be so focused about what you want. You have to deliver what other people want.
He's in the wrong role.
Wrong role. So the bottom line is, at the end of the day, we should be focused on the platinum rule. And the platinum rule is you should treat others as they want to be treated.
Yeah. Right? So you have to pay attention to social cues and hierarchy and all that good stuff.
Right. So the insinuation of the golden rule is that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Well, you know what? It's not always good.
Yeah.
Right? So the concept is you really have to be, you know, mindful, right, as to what is good for that other person. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you're going to operate that you're not being at someone else's expense, you've got to really truly understand their values, what's important to them, and be mindful of their what would make good sense for them, right? Yeah. So as an example, let's just say you were selling financial products and you like risk and you take a lot of risk. Well,
I'm a big chicken poo when it comes to finance, but yes, go.
Okay. Well, you certainly cannot, you can't project that onto somebody else who is a stage in their life or has a different mindset. Your role is to make sure that you help them to
understand where they're at.
Right.
Meet them where they are. And that's one thing I've come up with my, I was having a really hard time putting together service packages for my business. And one of the reasons I discovered was because I don't want to walk into anybody's business and force them to take a package because it's not going to fit. That doesn't make sense to me. And I, as a business owner, really am not a huge fan of getting forced into packages. So now when somebody asks me, what do you do? Well, part of what I do is I meet a business where they are and sit down and determine, okay, you don't actually need me to fill the skill gap for you for communications. You're actually in a position where you can handle it on your own for right now. Cool. All right, so let's arrange a teaching schedule. And once I did that, and I still get people asking me, well, you know, do you have a package and do you have a... No, it's project by project because I don't want to give you anything you don't need.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Simple as that.
Yep, very important. So you're really trying to tailor it to meet what their requirements are, what their needs are.
Yep.
And you're putting yourself in their shoes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, sometimes maybe I put myself, my own values too forward. Like, I wouldn't want to sell you something or get you to do something that I wouldn't personally feel was a good thing for me to do. But sometimes mm-hmm. I got to be careful because, as an example, let's just say I wouldn't spend
$3,000.
Well, at my expense, but also maybe that's not fair because you have a different, you know, I need to be thinking about what's important to you.
Yeah.
Right? So if you would spend $3,000 on a purse, I shouldn't put my values on you.
We talk about that in Ballsy all the time because just because it would be crazy pants for you to spend $10,000 on a new driveway, for somebody else, that would be a blink.
Exactly. And it's
and
all
don't
related.
Assume that they wouldn't pay that from a sales perspective.
Right. It's all
because
related.
You wouldn't.
Yeah, all related to what's important to the other person, right? And what they value, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have to be mindful of it both ways, right? Not to be operating at somebody else's expense both ways, right?
But not assuming that they can't operate a certain level because you can't.
Right. Or because you won't, just because that's not important to you.
Yeah. And I found that I was in a position where somebody needed me to behave in a certain way. They required a lot of positive reinforcement and a lot of rah-rah. And I don't really operate that way. I'm more of a, if you do something good, I'm going to tell you did something good. If I feel you deserve, you know, and I don't mean that in a sanctimonious way, but if you deserve praise for something, hell yes, I'll be your biggest cheerleader. But if you need pats on the back and reassurance constantly that you're doing it, I'm not your girl. And I finally had to have a little talk with that person to say, look, I hear what you need. I'm realizing that this is what you need. And if I do that, if I take on that artificial rah-rah role, I guarantee you it's artificial. Mm-hmm. There's nothing. And if you truly need that, I'm not giving you what you truly need. So either you need to recognize that in me, or we just need to find a different way for you to feel good about what you're doing. But I'm not going to fake it. I'm not going to fake praise.
No.
Because
it wouldn't be when it's not genuine, it's not going to work anyway, right? It won't be authentic. So that's really critical, the whole aspect of, you know, being at the platinum rule, which then puts an onus on us to figure out that other person and their values and to match to that, right?
Yeah, or as best as you're able, because like I said, I could not give her that level of reinforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it did teach me was that from the beginning when I start working with somebody, I will say flat out, look, if you need that kind of reinforcement, that's not how I function. If I'm not yelling at you, then you're doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do something that's praiseworthy, I'll be right there to do that. But mm-hmm. just up front, I'm not a good for you, rah-rah-psh, kind of, it's just not going to happen.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Now, one of the really good stories about values check is you know, just because you can doesn't make it right, right? So there was a really interesting thing that really exploded on social media a number of years ago, where a woman who I believe had some kind of a learning disability mm-hmm. had gone into a Mazda dealership in Toronto. And the Mazda dealership sold her a vehicle that they just kept putting more and more and more on.
And
it was completely over the price point that it should have been. It was they absolutely gouged her. And then, you know, I guess when somebody in her life must have pointed it out, or there was some kind of, you know, she realized what she had did. And this backfired so badly on this Mazda dealership. I'm not sure, but so I don't want to be, I don't want this to go on record, but I think they actually lost their dealership for it. It was a massive issue. And, you know, what probably happened that night, you know, and nobody knows this for sure, but probably they were like, ah, you look at how we got her, like, ha ha. And they were probably celebrating the margin and the money they made.
Or,
right?
Sorry, but the altruist in me goes, maybe she was nodding and saying yes because she didn't know, because she may not have really understood. So they may have taken it as consent.
Oh, certainly they did. But the point is,
did they know she had a challenge?
Well, the point, I think they did. From what came out, but who knows the real true story, mm-hmm. right? But I guess the bigger point is, just because you can doesn't mean it's right.
Agreed.
Right?
Agreed, 100%.
And I think at the end of the day, you know, there must have been something that was really wrong in that scenario, because the story never came back out that you never got the sense that was done with ethics, right?
Gotcha. It wasn't unintentional.
Yeah.
That's a shame. Yeah.
So the point is, just because you can doesn't make it right. And I believe there was some stuff in it that it was shady what they were charging for stuff.
That leads us towards the wrap up, which is when you are in a situation, what should you be looking for when it's potential? There's an expense somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, in any transaction, there's an expense somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the things that you should look for when you're in a situation to make sure that it's either you not getting it at somebody's expense or somebody's not getting something at your expense? And there was a few things that you did, number one here with the acid test.
Yeah. I always like to call it an acid test. So sometimes it's really important for us to stop and think, you know, towards the future. And we say, okay, so if I do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I buy this or I do this, how do I feel about it tomorrow? How do I feel about it 3 weeks from now? Does this really solve the problem for me or the opportunity? Is this really what I'm looking to do? Mm-hmm. You know, am I getting caught up in the emotion or in the way that the individual is influencing me or some of this, you know,
have
things
they appealed
that
to my ego a little too much?
Yeah, or are they, do I feel a bit played? Like, what does my belly button say, right?
So, I love that.
At the end of the day,
if somebody pushed your belly button, what would you say?
Yeah, and we need to know. You know, we got it. We have to trust it and then ask ourselves, how am I going to feel about this tomorrow? How am I going to feel about it next week?
Can you look yourself in the mirror?
Yep. Do I feel good about this decision? And then the second piece is to clarify your thinking. Where I'm going with that is a really good way, you know, to clarify your thinking is to project yourself even further. Like maybe mm-hmm. go 6 months to a year out and say, so what does success look like for me? So if I do this, how will I judge if this was a good decision today, 6 months from now?
Yeah.
How will I judge if this was a good decision a year from now?
Can I live with it?
Can I live with it? Is it the right decision? And how am I weighing that out? Like, does it feel right? And if it doesn't feel right, wait. You know, sometimes...
And that's both sides. Because some people can make a decision and it's a really fudgy decision, like the Mazda people, and they can live with that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of frightening.
Right. Because somebody okayed that deal in there. It wasn't just the sales rep, right?
It went up the chain
because, you know, it always does. So the bigger issue is, you know, to really sit back and clarify that thinking. And if it doesn't feel right, then, you know, coming back to the belly button,
problem.
Wait. And, you know, if they say, you know, well, if you come back tomorrow, the deal won't be here, you know, that's okay.
It's okay. When I was younger, at the ripe old age of 46, when I was younger, I went shopping for my first car, and they prey on that because mm-hmm. I was only 21, didn't know any better, and they're like, "Well, it might not be here tomorrow," and you're like, "Oh, you know, that sort of fake scarcity tactic that they use. And you know what? If it's supposed to be yours, it'll be there. If you're supposed to work with that person, and I don't mean in a fatalistic stance, but if anybody's holding something over your head to make you commit to the deal, right there, your belly button should be pulling you out the door.
Yep.
You know, any kind of scarcity tactic or whatever speaks more to the lack of values and ethics on the other person's side, which is a warning sign that you need to be out, and it's going to be at your expense. And my first car was at my expense.
Unless you've done your homework and you really know that this is a heck of a deal and there is a concern that it'll be gone, fine, but put a deposit on it.
Yeah.
Right? Like they're...
Minimize your risk.
Minimize your risk and make sure that it's the right decision, right?
Cool.
Yeah.
So we are going to just quickly wrap up. So some of the things that we have talked about today with not someone else's expense. I love this. The versus... I have so many ideas running around in my head for that because I think too many people try and make a solution fit versus creating the solution for their customer, which from a sales perspective is massive. Take the time to show that you care and create the solution. Don't try and slap that on there. Influencing with integrity. I love, you know, consistency compels you, and how, if you get into the habit of doing things at somebody else's expense, it will have consequences at some point or another. And I think the habit, you made a valid point, the habit can go either way. It can develop into a good habit, or it can develop into a crappy habit. And the crappy habits are scary. And think about your mama or your grandma or whoever raised you. But if they would shake their finger at you and be ashamed of you for what you're doing, oh yeah, that finger wag, I'm telling you, my mama gives me that look. I am 10 years old and I have just taken the last chocolate out of the whatever and I have tried to fib about it. I am 46 years old. My mama is a little 76-year-old that she can, in an instant, I'm like waiting to get spanked or something. It's terrible. If you feel that way about a deal, about something that you're doing, listen to your belly button.
Yep, get out, right?
Mamas and belly buttons.
Mamas and belly buttons.
Mamas and belly buttons.
This and acid tests.
This is what this is all about. Mamas, belly buttons, and acid tests. So very cool. Thank you so much. So we're going to be now flipping it around, and we're going to be talking next about body language. Dun, dun, dun. So thank you so much for joining us. I hope you've learned a thing or two about not only, again, about it being at your expense, but someone else's and different ways you can measure that. Thank you, Marguerite. You're awesome.
So are you, Miss Elizabeth.
Well, thank you. But you're the sales guru expert person, so I'm so glad that we're able to benefit from your wisdom.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure. It's a lot of fun.
Woohoo! And we have oranges today and tea, so it's always positive. Thank you so much, everybody. You can check me out on Twitter at MCBPLOOF, and you can check Marguerite out on Twitter at EMZ2.
Yes, Momentium.
And we're going to have to write that one out, but we'll provide it to you in the comments. So thank you so much, everybody. Have a great week. Bye-bye.